Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. As a ceasefire deadline looms in Syria, Russian warplanes on Friday continued bombing what the Kremlin calls terrorist organizations, amid reports that it has intensified attacks on rebel strongholds. The truce brokered by the United States and Russia is scheduled to take effect at midnight Damascus time. The Syrian opposition's umbrella group, the High Negotiations Committee, said in a statement that 97 groups have committed to observing the ceasefire. Iranians are casting their ballots for the first time since the country's nuclear deal with world powers took effect. The votes for parliament and the assembly of experts may provide the first clue as to whether key Western proponents of the deal will receive what they hoped for, a more open, moderate Iran. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
State TV showed voters across Iran giving their reasons for their choices. A man with a young child said he was voting for his children's future, while an older woman said she wanted to foil Iran's enemies who are plotting against the country. A correspondent for Iran's Al Alam TV at a major Tehran polling station said turnout was beyond expectations and that long lines of voters had shown up to express their support for their country and its Islamic system. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Look at our website at voanews.com. This reminder that this is VOA News. The U.S. economy grew at a faster pace than first thought at the end of last year, though it was still disappointingly slow. Friday's report from the Commerce Department says 2015's fourth quarter saw the gross domestic product expand at a 1% annual rate. Experts initially put the GDP growth rate a bit slower than that, and this estimate is a routine revision based on more complete data. The United States and Nigeria are in talks about sending U.S. military advisors to Nigeria's Borno state to help with the fight against Boko Haram insurgents. A U.S. official has told VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden that the talks are ongoing, but no decision has been made about the proposed deployment. The latest debate among Republican candidates for the U.S. presidency Thursday turned into a shouting match as the candidates tackled issues such as illegal immigration, U.S. policy in the Middle East, and transparency of candidates' tax records. But as the questioning began, it was frontrunner Donald Trump's closest rivals with a shared agenda attacking the credibility of the billionaire businessman. The United Nations Refugee Agency and UN Children's Fund are setting up 20 centers to support and protect children and families fleeing war and persecution as they move across Europe's well-worn migration routes. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The so-called Blue Dot Hubs are intended to be a safe place for children and families facing many risks once they arrive in Greece and move along the Balkan migratory route, which includes the former Republic of Macedonia, Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia. A huge blue dot identifies the locations as places where children can play and they and their families can receive vital services, protection, and counseling in a single location. Volker Turk, the UNHCR Assistant High Commissioner for Protection, says families on the move are very vulnerable, especially children. He says many are unaccompanied and others become separated from their families. He says children are at risk of sickness, trauma, sexual exploitation, trafficking, and violence. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
China has assured global financial leaders that the world's second largest economy is still in a good position despite slowing growth and a continued depreciation of its currency, the Chinese yuan. And while concerns persist about the pace of much-needed reform in China, policymakers are signaling they will take a more flexible approach to much-needed measures. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehia Yiswahib in Washington. Coming up at this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Since January, there are a lot less Syrians in the streets. You can't buy any more life jackets. You can't buy any more equipment that you need to go on such a boat to go to the islands.
That's reporter Ekrem Edi Gusalderi in Izmir, a Turkish coastal city, talking about the apparent decline in migrant smuggling to Greece. Details coming up. Also in the news, in Malawi, three opposition politicians are accused of planning to unseat President Peter Mutharika, and the U.S. military is considering placing special operations advisors on the front lines of Nigeria's seven-year war with Boko Haram militants. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Rwanda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the recent arrest in Malawi of three opposition politicians accused of planning to unseat President Peter Mutharika is causing dissent from various sections of the society. Since Sunday, Malawi police have rounded up three officials of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, for allegedly plotting a coup through a WhatsApp conversation. A fourth suspect, whose police say is outside the country, has yet to be arrested, but rights groups think the arrests are politically motivated. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi has no technology to do surveillance on WhatsApp and other social media. However, the police say they have arrested MCP executive Ulemu Nsungama, spokesperson Jessica Bwila, and the party's legal advisor Peter Chakwanta after they received a tip about a WhatsApp chat discussing how to unseat Mutharika. Lex Nkachama is the Malawi Police Inspector General.
There was that information on the WhatsApp, but we got the information from reliable sources. There are so many well-wishers who would not love to see the Malawi in future to be running up and down because of something that has been left out without being checked.
The police charged the suspect with treason. They are currently on bail awaiting formal charges. Political analyst Vincent Kondowe said that the move is questionable.
It's only the High Court which can give bail to cases of treason. So that in itself confirms the fears that these are only politically motivated arrests, and then they only serve political expediency, and that there is no substance in them after all.
One of the WhatsApp conversations seen by VOA says that President Peter Mutharika can be taken down the same way former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak was removed from power. Generally, conversations centered on ways to address social and economic problems Malawi currently faces. Kondowe says the suspects were only exercising their constitutional freedom of expression.
When you look at the substantive issues of that particular conversation, the border on freedom of expression that the people are reacting and evaluating their government, which is elected on trust. That conversation in itself does not constitute treason at all.
One of the suspects, Jessica Bwila, a parliamentarian, told local radio that she feels some of the WhatsApp messages were altered.
I'm not saying I'm not part of it. I can recognize some of the words, but some of them really sound doctored. A WhatsApp message flows. The dating is funny. Some of the places where there's supposed to be a name, it's clearly doctored.
Rafiki Hajjad of the Institute for Policy Interaction, a think tank, said what the suspects were writing about is not unfamiliar to Malawians.
What this group was discussing is the current pitiful situation that Malawi is in, the shortage of food, 3 million people starving, our currency, the Malawi kwacha, plummeting, and basically it's a whole litany of trials and tribulations which the government seems to have no clue how to resolve.
Presidential spokesperson Gerard Viola told VOA that although treason is a serious matter, President Mutharika does not take the conversation seriously.
No. The president is not moved because he knows that in Malawi, a person is given the position of president through a vote. So he's not intimidated. It's just probably laughing at the matters that were discussed.
He says the government is awaiting results of a full investigation. This is the second time in a month for officials of the MCP to be implicated in an attempt to topple the government. Earlier this month, the ruling Democratic Progressive Party said it has intelligence information that MCP, with assistance from the international community, was plotting to unseat President Mutharika by June this year. MCP officials denied those allegations. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The U.S. military is considering placing special operations advisors on the front lines of Nigeria's seven-year war with Boko Haram militants. The New York Times says U.S. Special Operations Commander for Africa, Brigadier General Donald C. Baldock, has recommended moving non-combat advisors, troops, hundreds of miles closer to the conflict. In more news, in the northeast of Nigeria, several explosives seized from Boko Haram militants accidentally blew at a police station in Yola yesterday, killing at least four people and wounding several others. The explosives were confiscated from Boko Haram insurgents. Most of the migrants and refugees entering Europe this year come from Turkey. The numbers are lower because of bad weather and efforts by the Turkish government to drive illegal smugglers underground. VOA's David Arnold talked to VOA stringer Ekrem Edi Guzulderi in the coastal city of Izmir about the drop in migrant smuggling across the Aegean to Greece.
One of the centers for refugees who try to go to Europe via the Greek islands has been Izmir for the past year, and there was a very open scene of refugees looking for smugglers and looking for ways to go to coastal cities and from these coastal cities then to the islands. And that was very visible during the summer, basically until January. The quarter of Basmane has become the center in Izmir for newly arrivals, getting contact with smugglers, and then after hours or days, they would continue to the coastal cities like Bodrum, about 1 to 2.5 hours by car from Izmir.
Who are the smugglers?
Usually it's a mixture of both Syrians and Turks who organize that together. The Syrians usually make the first contact with the refugees in Basmane and to transport them to places where so Turkish citizens involved.
Most of the migrants are Syrian?
Yeah, the majority is Syrian. However, the number of other nationalities is quite high. There are currently many Afghans who also try to get via the Greek islands to Greece and then to Europe. So it's they are, at most, they are 50% at the current state. Yeah, I mean, the islands are so close, so these are only really rubber boats, very simple for 10 to 15 people with a motor that often doesn't work. But the distance is between not even 1 kilometer to 3-4 kilometers. And the infrastructure now, this is basically just rubber boats. Since January, there are a lot less Syrians in the streets. You can't buy any more life jackets. You can't buy any more equipment that you need to go on such a boat, to go to the islands. So that has become a lot less visible and also driven to other districts or other parts of the Aegean. But it's still happening, of course, but it's not that visible anymore.
Are they being driven underground by officials in Turkey?
Yeah, that is. I mean, even if Turkey so far does not do a lot to prevent all that smuggling and people leaving from the coast, due to the negotiations with the EU, they have increased controls and raids by the police and arrest of smugglers and controls at the border and increased also the control in the water. And that all led to the situation that there are less refugees and there are less smugglers since about a month. There are still thousands of people leaving from the coast towards the Greek islands. but so Turkey can show we can do something, and if we come to an agreement, then we can do a lot more, and this will be negotiated in March when these bilateral meetings between Turkey and the EU will take place again.
Has there been any corruption within the government?
Yeah, I mean, this is at least what's being told by some of the smugglers who were interviewed. But this can be changed, of course, with more control. But I think that Turkey will try to use this as a trump in the negotiations, that saying to the Europeans, if you don't want any more refugees, then you need to give us something that we increase the controls.
And I assume that means more money.
That means more money, but also maybe opening certain chapters in the EU are key in the negotiations, speeding up the process of visa-free traveling to the EU, which has been promised for quite some time.
If Turkey is successful in driving the smuggling underground, where will the refugees go?
I mean, it will, of course, make it more expensive. I think then still that's possible to leave from the coast. You just need to go from places that are further away. This makes it more dangerous, more difficult, and more expensive. Maybe they find a way through the Caucasus, or as it was before, they would need to find a way through the Mediterranean with bigger boats, as it was already from Merse into Italy. But it will definitely be more difficult, more costly, and more dangerous. Europe has one more or one and a half more months to find a solution. If that is not the case, then the number will increase a lot.
That was VOA's David Arnold talking to reporter Ekrem Edi Guzelderi in Izmir, Turkey. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe celebrates his 92nd birthday Saturday with no signs he intends to relinquish power, but it seems his party is split on what the future holds for him and the ruling ZANU-PF party. Sebastian Monfu reports from Harare.
Last week, President Mugabe made a previously unannounced State of the Nation address to condemn two factions within his ruling ZANU-PF party that seemed to be angling to take over from him.
We must not have the fights and quarrels that appear to be taking place now. Let's work for our people to survive. Let's remain united. So those who are saying we belong to this faction or that faction, I say to them, shut up. You belong to Zimbabwe. Shut up and let us not hear any divisive voices from you. The G40s or what you call Costa, whatever. Shut up.
The two factions Mugabe referred to are headed by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, referred to as Lacoste, and his wife Grace, referred to as G40. Since his address, nothing much has changed. Nyamutatanga Makombe, an independent political analyst, comments on the divisions in Zimbabwe's ruling party.
Mugabe may weather the storm. That is, if he does, clearly showing who is his preferred successor. If he continues like what he has done, trying to balance the two forces or the two factions, it may cost him ultimately. Like, his power is dwindling because we don't know where those who used to support him stand, given the configurations at the moment. The other storm that is brewing around him is his age. People may also be getting a cue from his age, and that's why there's this dog fight.
Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since its independence from Great Britain in 1980, has refused to indicate when he will step down. At the Africa Union summit in January, he said he would continue to lead his country until God asks him to, quote, join the other angels. At his 92nd birthday in Mashingo, an impoverished area about 350 kilometers south of Harare this weekend, the issue of who will succeed him might not be discussed officially, but it will remain on people's minds. Analyst Makombe questions the need for a large birthday celebration, particularly in an area where hunger is pervasive.
Any normal thinking political party could have said we are not going to hold them this year. We are talking here of a massive hunger where people are going to celebrate with cakes and blowing balloons. Even the government itself has sent an SOS, have declared a state of emergency. At one level they are celebrating, at the other level people are suffering.
64-year-old Jesmael Mhlanga is one of those scoffing at the $800,000 birthday bash.
But as things stand now, I don't think it was a wise idea. I think negatively about it. I'm suffering. I want the economy fixed. I think in solidarity with the many people who are suffering, we shouldn't have had a bash because we're suffering around. You should have actually sympathized. Let's forgo the bash. You fought for this country. But the fight still goes on. We want on the political front. We want to win on the economic front. So you should be wise enough to show some regard to what is happening to the economy. It's like, I know you have been hungry for 2-3 days, and I eat nice food in front of you. How would you feel?
Mugabe's government has made an international appeal for $1.6 billion to import grain for about 3 million Zimbabweans facing hunger. Mugabe's ZANU-PF party has argued that the birthday bash should go ahead for the quote-unquote iconic and selfless leader who has made many sacrifices for his nation. Sebastian Mofu, VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Twenty-two past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The recent arrest in Malawi of three opposition politicians accused of planning to unseat President Peter Mutharika is causing dissent from various sections of the society. The U.S. military is considering placing special operations advisors on the front lines of Nigeria's seven-year war with Boko Haram militants. And Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe celebrates his 92nd birthday tomorrow with no signs he intends to relinquish power. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The Associated Press says, in Uganda, more than 200 opposition party members carrying polling materials from the disputed presidential election have been detained. Lawyer Yusuf Nsabambi says a court challenge of last week's re-election of President Yoweri Museveni by the Forum for Democratic Change Party has been weakened by the detentions. Meanwhile, opposition leader Chiza Besigye, the unsuccessful presidential candidate, has been under house arrest for 1 week. He says the election results are fraudulent. February is the month that America recognizes and celebrates the history and achievements of African Americans. One of the most historic events that has been highlighted over time is the Civil Rights Movement, which took place from the mid-1950s throughout the 1960s. Its achievements include the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It banned discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin in employment practices. Another was the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which restored and protected the voting rights of people. Kristen Clark is president and executive director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about some of the top civil rights issues of today and how these issues are affecting minority communities.
You know, we have made great progress as a nation, but I think that we are still struggling with a number of issues. Top of that list is criminal justice issues. We make up 5% of the world's population here in the United States, but we house 25% of all prisoners on the planet. And we know that the vast majority of those people, a disproportionate number of those people, are African Americans and Latinos who are the victims of racial profiling. And we know that many of these people are nonviolent offenders. A number of them are first-time offenders. We need to figure out how we tackle and address the era of mass incarceration that we are living in inside the United States and reduce our prison population and the impact that incarceration has on so many Black communities across the United States. A second issue that we struggle with concerns voting rights. The right to exercise the most important principle in our democracy, having the ability to go out to the polls and freely cast the ballot on election day. So many states around the country have moved to adopt burdensome and restrictive measures that make exercising the right to vote more difficult. And that's a shame. In the 2014 midterm election cycle in the United States, only 37% of Americans turned out to vote. That was the lowest rate that we saw in more than 70 years. We need to figure out how do we make voting easier in our country, and how do we get more people to turn out and participate and exercise that most important and fundamental right to vote.
And looking at these issues that you mentioned, how do they compare to issues back in the 1960s where many African Americans were demonstrating and protesting for their rights?
Since the 60s, I think we see a story of great progress. I mean, there are more African American elected officials today. We have our first African American president. So it is undeniable that we have made progress, but that progress is fragile. And we still have a long way to go to achieve the goal of true equality in our country. There are still too many African Americans who are the victims of police misconduct and police brutality and racial profiling. We still suffer disparities when it comes to accessing jobs and accessing housing. We're still struggling to achieve the goal of racial integration, which was at the heart of the movement in the 1960s. So we've seen progress, but we need not be blind by that progress. There still is work to do to make our democracy a place that is open and equal for all Americans.
With this being an election year here in the United States, what issues would you like to see the presidential candidates address?
I think that every presidential election candidate, on no matter what side of the aisle they stand on, should most certainly be focused on the criminal justice issues that plague our nation and figuring out how we can bring an end to the era of mass incarceration and deal with the fallout, the collateral consequences that mass incarceration has had.
That was Kristen Clark, president and executive director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
On Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America, and here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. In Malawi, three opposition politicians are accused of planning to unseat President Peter Mutharika. The U.S. military is considering placing special operations advisors on the front lines of Nigeria's seven-year war with Boko Haram militants. And Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe celebrates his 92nd birthday tomorrow with no sign he intends to relinquish power. Coming up, music from Rwanda. And in our feature segment, a Malawian prison band first Grammy nomination for Best World Music category at this year's awards ceremony. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Hello, Sunny.
Happy Friday, Yehiz.
I understand there is a new president for football's governing body.
Big new president, head of FIFA now, Yehiz. Let's kick off in Zurich, Switzerland, where Gianni Infantino on Friday was elected the new president of FIFA, world football's governing body. The 45-year-old Infantino needed two rounds of voting to beat runner-up Sheikh Salman bin Ibrahim Al Khalifa from Bahrain. In the first round, Infantino narrowly defeated Sheikh Salman, 88 votes to 85. However, to be elected FIFA president in the first round, a candidate must receive two-thirds of the votes, or 138 votes, cast by FIFA's 207 members. In the second round, a simple majority, or 104 votes, is needed, and Infantino received 115. Infantino previously served as General Secretary of UEFA, European football's governing body. Born in Switzerland, the new FIFA president succeeds another Swiss official, Sepp Blatter, whose 17-year reign ended in disgrace in a corruption scandal that rocked FIFA. Before the vote, FIFA passed a series of reform measures. The new FIFA president, Infantino, had this to say after his big victory.
Everyone in the world will applaud us and will applaud all of you for what we'll do in FIFA in the future. We have to be proud of FIFA, and everyone has to be proud of FIFA, and we have to be proud of what we will do together in FIFA. I would like to thank all of you, all 209, all the other candidates. We had a sporting competition. Tokyo said it. One can win and four will not win. But we had a sporting competition, and it was a great sign of democracy in FIFA. And I want to be the president of all of you, of all 209 national associations.
That's Gianni Infantino, the new president of FIFA, who was elected on Friday. We heard Infantino mention Tokyo. He was referring to Tokyo Sekwale, the only African candidate in the FIFA presidential election. Shortly before the vote, though, the South African Sekwale withdrew, leaving only two other candidates, Jordan's Prince Ali bin Al Hussein and Frenchman Jerome Champagne. This election was called the most important in FIFA's 112-year history as the organization tries to restore its reputation amid corruption charges and investigations by the U.S. Department of Justice and Swiss law enforcement. African football guru David Legg joins us now with his latest quiz question.
Which club has qualified the most times to compete in the CAF Champions League? And that includes the former name of the competition. It was then known as the African Cup of Champions Clubs. So what we're talking about, Sonny, is way back to 1964 when this competition started. So it's between 1964 and 2015, which club has qualified the most times to compete in the CAF Champions League?
2016 is a leap year, David, so we're going to set a deadline of Monday, February 29th, to get your entries in. David and I will now tell you where you can send your entries.
VOA! It's david.legge, and leg is spelled L-E-G-G-E, at AFP, that's Agence France Press, .com. So I'll just repeat that one more time. It's david.legge, L-E-G-G-E, at AFP.com.
The Sunny Side of Sports welcomes your comments. You can send me email at sunny@voanews.com. Sunny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237. So remember, we have a February 29th deadline for David Legge's quiz. The first three people with correct answers will be receiving some of those delightful VOA goodies.
What's better than the Sunny Side of Sports? More Sunny Side of Sports. Listen to our new expanded show now on VOA Africa.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting spotty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Boxing news now on the Voice of America. American Charles Martin makes the first defense of his IBF heavyweight title April 9th when he takes on Britain's Anthony Joshua at the O2 Arena in London. Both fighters are unbeaten. Martin has 23 wins and one draw, while Joshua, who has ties to Nigeria, has won his first 15 prize fights, all by knockout. Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moweta, is predicting Joshua will win the IBF belt in the British capital.
Oh, Sonny, if he picks up the belt April 9th, when he will pick up the belt April 9th, he has David Haye in England. He has Chisora in England. He has Tyson Fury. He has big, big fights in front of him, but he must deliver on April 9th by a spectacular knockout.
So he's got some British options available to him.
Big British options that will end up at the Wembley Arena for big fights. I mean, heavyweight boxing is back in the UK, and they have the players, and they have the big boys, and they're going to draw a big, big number. Anthony Joshua is there. Tyson Fury is there. David Haye is there. Chisora is there. Some other young cats are there. So the action is in the UK.
Big, big numbers, Namdi. I think we might see some big, big numbers May 7th in Las Vegas when Saul Canelo Alvarez takes on Amir Khan. How is that fight shaping up?
Oh, Sonny, that's a huge fight. I mean, we're talking about numbers. We're looking at this fight may even pull in $100 million, Sonny.
Mm.
Canelo is a big draw. Khan is a draw himself. He's a good talker. He can talk up the fight. So, and it's a Cinco de Mayo weekend, and it's going into a brand new arena, the T-Mobile Arena. And this arena seats 22,000 people. Why wouldn't you want to go? It will sell out. It will bring in a live gate of close to $17 million. So when you throw in pay-per-view, you throw in closed circuit, throw in foreign TV rights, huge numbers, Sonny.
Tactically, Namdi, can Khan win with his speed and maybe get a points decision?
Until he gets caught. Sonny, Khan has what we call in the game a China chin, a glass chin. You're tapping on that chin, he goes down, you know. And a big puncher like Canelo Alvarez, he will just have to cut the ring off and stay right on him, and then he can break the ribs and crack the jaw a couple of times and it'll be over. But Sonny, this is a fight game. Go back and look at the Canelo Mayweather. Khan can make it a very easy fight. Decision, he cannot hurt Canelo. Points, win, unanimous decision. Everybody will be shocked. And then what happens to Triple G?
At this point, Namdi, do you think it's just a matter of time before Canelo catches Khan in that fight?
He may even catch him in the first round, and the first second of the first round would be over, you know. But how about if he cannot catch him? How about if he cannot cut off the ring? How about if he cannot land that big one punch that we know, the big right hand or the left hook? How about if he's unable to do that? We end up seeing a boring, one-sided fight.
The winner of Canelo Khan, do they next face Triple G?
Well, that's the deal. The winner of Canelo Khan must face Triple G in September, and they're looking at the Cowboy Stadium in Dallas, Texas, that can hold more than 100,000 people.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny.
What's trending in the sports world on this Friday?
Well, we have big breaking news. We have a new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. He's a Swiss-Italian who is the UEFA General Secretary and is now the new president of FIFA. So congratulations to him. A lot of people, of course, we talked about earlier, were talking about this election on social media. And now that Mr. Infantino has been elected, they're talking about what he might do as the new FIFA president, and including himself, Mr. Infantino.
Okay. He has a Twitter handle.
He
now
does. It's Gianni underscore 2016. And he tweeted out just about 25 minutes ago. He said, "Truly humbled by today's decision, let's bring FIFA forward together." Now, that tweet already has over 500 retweets, about 500 likes,
okay,
in just less than half an hour. I think it's really interesting, is on his Twitter bio here, he still lists himself as the UEFA General Secretary and FIFA presidential candidate. So he's going to have to go in and update that now, because he is, in fact, the head man there.
I think he can definitely update that
yes,
bio.
Yes, absolutely.
What's been the general reaction to Infantino's election?
Well, it's funny because earlier today we were talking about, you asked if there were any kind of allegiances on social media, and I said that it was pretty much people waiting to see what the results would be. But like any kind of sporting event, after the fact, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon of the winner. So you have a lot of people now tweeting, "Oh, I'm so glad he won. I was rooting for him the whole time." There are some other people, though, saying Tokyo Sequale. They wish that he would have stayed in, and it would have been an interesting race with him. But there's a lot of high hopes still that Gianni Infantino, will really run with FIFA and clean up a lot of the corruption and make it even better than it is now. Somebody noted that one of the things that he's talked about is expanding the World Cup.
Right, to 40 teams, I think.
Yeah, so people are interested about that for sure. One person saying, "I hope it doesn't last, you know, longer than it does now, you know, weeks or months of World Cup." I guess somebody has too much soccer in that case.
Now, he succeeds another official from Switzerland, Sepp Blatter, who kind of ended in disgrace his reign.
Right.
What's your sense of Infantino? Will there maybe be term limits on him as president?
It'll be interesting to see. I think you're definitely going to see reforms. Certainly, judging him by what people are saying in social media, they're hoping that he'll institute some reforms, certainly crack down on the corruption. But it'll be interesting to see what his tenure brings if it brings term limits. He's very young. He's only 45 years old, so he could conceivably serve for a very long time. And in fact, he's only the third FIFA president since 1974. So for previous presidents, they've served for a very long time. So maybe he might say, you know what, I'm going to serve for 5 years or 10 years, and then that's that, and I'm going to go do something else.
This election took two rounds to complete, Andrew. Did you get a sense following social media that there was a crescendo after that second round of balloting?
I think people on social media knew something was going to happen. And this is one of the reasons I love social media. People are very perceptive. They said, okay, the first round of balloting took about an hour and 15 minutes. This one took about an hour and 50 minutes. So it took a little longer. So that means there's some maybe negotiating. Mm. Maybe they've reached a final decision and they're delaying until they can announce the results. So people are very perceptive about that. But a lot of people saying, too, oh, gosh, I hope it doesn't go on for a third or a fourth or a fifth. And sure enough, after two rounds, the election was done.
Gianni Infantino, the new FIFA president. Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media reporter. Thanks for joining us again, Andrew.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I'll see you again on Monday.
Sounds good.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Going to send it back to Yehias Wuhee.
Thank you, Sonny, and thank you, Andrew. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Friday, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, a Malawian prison band's first Grammy nomination. But first, some music. Here is Manny Martin from Rwanda with Yoba Yoba.
Yara dufite turabuzukuru batatu twibera mu mataba twiragira inkazi wacu akadukamira yera tukanywa tukanyurwa tukitetera umukuru muri twe akabinajorwa umukurikiye akabinarumikwa nanjye umuto muri bo maze kuba umugabo udaterwa kundi mwanyuma shenge Tangira kuryana byato nato bazo tubonye bikamurenga bikamuyobera bikamushobera sogokuru yaje kuducira umugani nako numufindo mbambaroga afata inkone eshatu arazivangikanya azibohesha umurungu ukomeye ati bana banjye mubaze kuba abagabo ngaho nimuvunaguriza inkoni ndeba bana banjye uburiza muri twe arazisingira zimunaniya zikikiriza ubuheta nangiuye ture nizana nkwereke araho dufatanije twazivunagura inkoni zitubera ibamba ziratunanira Fata azikuraho wa murunga arazikonyagura imwe kuyindi tukora tugira ati mumaze kubona abana banjye nimuguma hamwe ntawe uzabatera nimuguma kuryana bazabavunagura nk'izi nkoni
ayibaba we ayibaba we ayibaba
Manny Martin of Rwanda with Yoba Yoba. A Malawian prison band got its first Grammy nomination for Best World Music category at this year's awards ceremony. The group did not win, but they are hopeful they can make another run at a Grammy in the future. Lamek Masina met with the band members at Malawi's maximum security Zomba Central Prison and filed this report.
The prison reform band was created in 2008, largely to entertain inmates at Zomba Maximum Security Prison. This was in addition to the Malawi Prison Brass Band. Acting Chief Commissioner of Prisons, Litu Dinizulu Ntengano, says the band came into being when he bumped into a group of musical young prisoners.
When I visited the Zomba Central Prison, I saw some boys playing local-made guitars from empty gallons, and they could play music. And once they started playing music, there was an attraction of prisoners coming out from their cells to listen this music. And I said, no, let us improve this.
He proposed funding from the National AIDS Commission for the musicians to start composing songs about HIV/AIDS awareness messages.
They gave us 500,000. We bought 3 electrical guitars, a set of drums, and a very small speakers. Oh, the guys were very happy. And we started composing HIV/AIDS related awareness campaign music inside the prisons.
This led to authorities giving the band additional funds to buy more musical instruments. A prison officer, Aline Sikaunde, is the deputy leader of the band. She says the Grammy nomination was a surprise to everyone at the prison. She says the band was surprised when an American man came to record their music and they were suspicious of his motive. She says they did not know what he wanted to do with the recordings or where he wanted to take them. She said the band only allowed him to record because it was an instruction from authorities. Band member Ernest Kufandiko was sentenced in 2009 for theft. He said the nomination confirms that a prison is a reformatory center and not a dumping ground. He says the general public should not expect the band members will be leading their previous lifestyle when released. What they should know is that the convicts have learned skills that once released, they will know that these young men have indeed changed. The 20-song album was recorded in 2013 by visiting American Grammy-winning producer Ian Brenner, who later gave it international exposure. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Zomba, Malawi.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent speech at Stanford University, Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor Tom Malinowski spoke of an age-old contest, the struggle between the desire of people to be free, to be treated with dignity, and to have control over their own lives, and the fundamentally authoritarian impulse that believes ordinary men and women are too small-minded to govern their own affairs, the impulse that fuels the dictator's desire to seize and cling to power. Today, the latter impulse, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, is seen in its most extreme manifestation in ISIL, where terrorists seek to use the veneer of religious legitimacy to justify a thirst for control that includes the desire to kill, rape, and subjugate. But there are other places that reflect the authoritarian urge. Bashar al-Assad's Syria, with its brutal reaction to the aspirations of the Arab Spring. Vladimir Putin's Russia, where human rights organizations are now being vilified as traitors. China, where the government is lashing out at dissidents at home and kidnapping them abroad. But the ardent desire for people to control their own lives is also having its successes, said Mr. Malinowski. In Burma, where the people were able to cast their ballots for elected lawmakers for the first time in decades. In Sri Lanka, where the two communities that had long divided the country, the Sinhalese and Tamils, came together in an election to oust an authoritarian government. In Venezuela, where the people showed an overwhelming desire for change in legislative elections, despite a ruling party's determined control of police, the courts, and media. The United States, with its own ideals of democracy and the rule of law, has a great stake in the battle that is being waged. So it makes great sense, Mr. Malinowski said, that we defend people around the world who are trying peacefully to advance respect for human rights before conflict between power and people leads to devastating consequences. That we speak out when governments try to stifle dissent or control the internet or pollute their citizens' efforts and aspirations with corruption. Our hopes for the world may not be fully realized, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, but the world is not falling apart. It is presenting a challenge to which we must rise. And if we keep doing so, I believe things will get better, slowly but surely.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news.
Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.